If you're anything like me, you probably had a humble little pothos at the beginning of your plant parent journey. It is the best plant. It's forgiving, it's fast growing, and honestly, it's probably the most underrated plant in most of our collections. But what if I was to tell you there is so much more to the humble pothos than what meets the eye? We know it as the golden or marble queen hanging in our kitchen, but boy, oh boy, are there so many interesting and gorgeous varieties that you might be missing out on. So in today's episode, we are taking a deep dive into the world of pothos, like way past the basics. I'm joined by Justin Hancock from Costa Farms. He's not only one of the nicest plant nerds ever, but he is literally someone who, for his job, tests new varieties of pothos and other houseplants in his home for a living. Yes, that's a real job. Yes, you will learn more about it. Today, we're going to chat about all the different types of pothos and how to care for them, from the classic golden to rare cultivars like lemon meringue, Shangri-La, even fenestrated versions that are hitting the market. We will also learn how to differentiate between the cousins, Scindapsus, similar plants with different names. How do you tell them apart? You'll know by the end of this episode. Whether you're a beginner still figuring out if it's an epipremnum or a philodendron, or you're a seasoned plant collector, this episode is packed with tips, trivia, and planty joy celebrating the humble pothos, but more importantly, how much we all love plants. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. Justin, my new plant friend, welcome. I can't believe it's taken so long to have you on the podcast.
I know. I'm so excited to be here, Maria.
I had so much fun with you at House of Plants in Seattle at Northwest Flower and Garden Show. And we really ended up being quite the duo throughout our day. It was very fun playing with you and throwing questions back and forth to each other.
We did. It was the best thing ever, I think.
Yeah. We got to live our Britney Spears dreams with those amplifiers and the microphones. Yep. That was super fun too.
Yep. I'm very happy to be your backup dancer.
Yeah. I'm honored to have you as my backup dancer. So before we dive into pothos, which I'm so excited, I can't believe I've never done a deep dive on pothos before as we're approaching 300 episodes, but we've just been waiting for you, Justin. We've just been waiting for the perfect pothos expert to be on the show. But you have such an interesting background in horticulture and how you've kind of become the plants man that you are today. So can you give us a brief insight into how you became who you are?
Sure. So I'm one of those kids that was lucky enough. I always knew I wanted to do plants. Like when the other little boys wanted to be firemen and astronauts, I knew I wanted to do plants. And so it's always been a sort of a straight shot path for me. I went to college for horticulture, you know, and I didn't really think beyond, you know, horticulture. It was just, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, it's like, what's a whole big field? And my first summer in college, I got an internship with a book publisher. And that sealed it. Like, this is exactly what my life is meant to be, is horticultural publishing and consumer horticulture. Started work at a magazine, outgrew the magazine, went to Better Homes and Gardens for 10 years. And then Costa Farms offered me a position to help with their marketing down in Miami. So then I went from the Midwest to steamy Florida.
What does your plant collection look like, both indoor and outdoor? I know we're both in, you know, zone 10B now. We're in the depths of Florida.
You know, my collection is really kind of strange right now because of my role at Costa Farms. I test new varieties. And so it's like, I love the plants we grow. A lot of them are, you know, not necessarily the plants I would have chosen. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they come to me and I have to test them in the home, and there's only so much room in your house, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's sort of shifted the way that my indoor plant collection is.
Interesting. So when Costa is developing a new plant, you take it home to see how it does in certain environments.
Exactly. Yep. I'm one of the home environment testers to see, you know, how does it hold up with different light? How does it hold up with different watering?
Mm-hmm.
Is the average person going to be successful with it?
Okay, so it sounds like you don't really have choice over what plants you bring home. You're kind of informed of your plant collection.
Oh, no. I still buy plants that I love.
I love that. But also, you know, something that I've noticed about Costa particularly is your wide variety of pothos that you have. Because I have kind of fallen back in love with pothos. It was one of my first houseplants. I feel like it was my greatest teacher, one of the most forgiving plants I've ever had. I still have it. It's in my office. It's looking at me right now. And then recently, I feel like I've been seeing more different varieties of pothos just beyond Marble Queen. Why do you think this trend towards pothos is happening again?
So it's certainly easy care, like you said. And we've also seen that there's a lot of enthusiasm around climbing and trailing plants, particularly in the aroid family. Mm-hmm. And pothos is an aroid. So it's sort of the perfect storm of there's a bunch of varieties to collect. Anybody can grow it. It's part of a trendy group of plants anyway that mm-hmm. is just putting this group of plants on fire right now.
Yeah. Mine is climbing. I have a rattan, like I believe it's called etagere, but it's basically a bookshelf and it's climbing all over my bookshelf and it's so beautiful.
You know, and that's one of the things that I think makes it particularly fulfilling for the home gardener is mm-hmm. that when you get it to climb, the leaves get bigger. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like a badge of honor. You know, I have this accomplishment for my pothos that it doesn't look like the ones in the store anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more mature, it's beefier, and that's because of me as a gardener.
Yeah. And also I feel like a badge of honor slash a disaster is when it gets so happy that it starts attaching to your walls.
Yes.
That happened in one of my apartments. So that's a real thing. So if pothos climb, their leaves actually do get bigger.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And substantially bigger in a lot of cases, especially if you have a warm spot with a lot of light. But down here in Florida, you've seen them where they can be more than 2 feet across each individual leaf.
Yeah, they climb trees. We're so lucky that we live down here now, or that I live down here now, because you really get to see plants in all of our house plants, like in their natural habitat. And I go on this walk with my sister and there's this huge tree that has this enormous, what looks like a marble pothos, but the leaves are enormous. They have cuts almost like they don't even look like fenestrations. They look like the cuts of a banana plant. You know how they get
the slits.
But it's unbelievable just how thick the stems are and what these plants look like in real life compared to what they look like on our bookshelves. There's a stark difference. My mom goes in her backyard and she'll cut them up and put them in water. And they look like monsteras almost, you know, because the leaves are so big. The leaves are as big as a monstera leaf. And so she has her house filled with all of these just like rogue water-rooted pothos, enormous plants. And they look incredible. And they probably would have cost, you know, so much money in the store. So speaking of natural habitat, where do pothos come from?
Southeast Asia, particularly the Solomon Islands. Some species go down through Australia and that pocket down there in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm.
And what are those climates look like? Obviously, they're climbing trees, but what does it look like? What does their day-to-day look like?
Yeah, so a lot like yours, actually. It's steamy most of the year, drier season in winter, wetter season in summer. You know, high summer temperatures, abundant humidity, abundant rainfall.
And with pothos, I remember learning pothos as pothos. And then all of a sudden I started seeing epipremnum as pothos. Pothos has a myriad of names. So what is a pothos plant? What makes a pothos a pothos?
You know, that is sort of up to the eye of the beholder.
Okay.
Within the plant community, I see like three camps. The camp that we're in here at Costa Farms, you know, is the most basic, for everybody camp, where basically any epipremnum species, we can use the common name pothos. And then you sort of have this middle camp where they feel like only epipremnum aureum varieties mm-hmm. should be pothos. And any of the other cool epipremnum species, it's not fair to call those pothos.
Okay.
And then you have the diehards who say pothos is the botanical name of another genus. So you should not be using it as a common name for any epipremnum.
So much drama.
I know. The plant community loves their drama.
So much drama. The nickname for pothos is devil's ivy. Where does that come from?
I've heard a couple of different derivations for that. One is that it's so fast growing, you know, it's almost devilish. And then, you know, of course, being a climbing trailing plant, it's easy to compare it to ivy. You know, the other one I've heard, which kind of makes me laugh, is that because it's such a tolerant plant, it tolerates low light, it even grows in the dark. And so, you know, it's from the devil in that way.
Right. Okay. Got it. Interesting. Interesting. And then when it comes to pothos identifying, I have always struggled identifying what is a pothos and what is a heart leaf philodendron. And now also skindapsis is having this rise in popularity. And so I'm like, what's a skindapsis? How can you differentiate telling what you have, what you're looking at?
So between pothos and heart leaf philodendron, there's typically a textural difference in the leaf. Mm-hmm. If you don't have them next to each other, a textural difference makes it a little bit harder. Philodendrons generally have deciduous little, I know there's a botanical word for it. I can't pull it out off the top of my head, but like little sheaths at the base of the leaf where the new leaf comes out.
Okay.
And with pothos, they generally stay on.
Sheaths meaning like when the new leaf comes out, it's like that protective almost wrapping
that
falls off.
Exactly.
So a philodendron has that. And then if your plant doesn't have that protective wrapping sheath, it's probably a pothos.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what about pothos and skindapsis? Those are very hard to tell apart as well.
I know. That is much, much harder. I wish I could give you a botanical thing. Mm-hmm. Most of the common skindapsis, and this is super general because, you know, this is most of the common ones, are going to be more in the gray variegated tones than the actual white. Most of the common skindapsis have like a little reflective variegation going on. So it looks like they sparkle in the sun, whereas pothos don't have that sparkly. That's the best I can do off the top of my head with that one.
Yeah. When we were in Seattle, I did planting for Crescent Garden and you and I were talking about what plants to do and the pot was gray. And so I went with a silver themed pot and I ended up using there was like a Diffenbachia that had a little bit of a silvery kind of iridescence to it. And then I think I used three different skindapsis because they all had that interesting silvery foliage and it looked so pretty against the gray pot.
I bet. Yeah. Silver is just fantastic to use.
Yeah. It was quite the vibe. So we're finding pothos in steamy, you know, kind of jungle tropical environments. What does that mean when we take them indoors? So what are your common care guidelines for pothos?
So happily, it is really forgiving. You don't need to replicate the Southeast Asian environment the way that you do some of the other houseplants. Which is why it's such a tried and true favorite. Average household temperatures are just fine. In general, you want to keep it over about 50 degrees or so. Average relative humidity is fine. Of course, it prefers more humidity than less. Light, it loves bright light. It tolerates low light. In the industry, we talk a lot about indirect light. And I understand why, but in a way, it's kind of a misnomer too. Because the vast majority of houseplants will do okay with direct light coming in through a window if they're acclimated to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're grown under shade or they're grown in greenhouses where the light levels are reduced. And so they can experience some sunburn if they go right from a shade house to a store to a south-facing window. But if you give them a chance to acclimate, most of these houseplants are going to love that south-facing window, even though they get the direct afternoon sun on them. They just need to build up the tolerance to it first.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the camp now thinking that like most people overestimate how much light that they have indoors. I rarely have heard listeners, you know, you're getting feedback from your customers all the time. I'm getting DMs from my listeners all the time. Troubleshooting questions. I've had so many troubleshooting listeners write me and not have enough light. Maybe once in my 8 years of doing this, I've had someone burn something like because of light indoors, you know, not in a grow light situation, because I really do think we really drastically overestimate our light, especially now too that I've lived in so many homes. I'm just like, this is confusing and really hard to understand.
And as you've probably learned too, the sun coming through your windows is very different in Florida than the sun coming through your windows in New York, even if you have the same size, same south-facing window.
Totally.
You know, and so it's, you know, the industry to make it easy speaks in broad terms. And, you know, this plant that was just in the shade house in Florida, going to a south facing window in Florida might get burned, but in New York, it probably won't.
Well, you want to know something interesting?
Yeah.
In Florida, I have the lowest light home I've ever had.
Okay.
Because my windows have UV treatments on them And I have huge eaves over all of my windows.
Right, because of efficiency. Like, they're trying to keep your home cool because you're in such a hot climate.
Exactly. So I moved to Florida and my home has enormous windows in it. And I was like, oh my God, I've hit the jackpot. This is going to be great. And then I'm here and I'm like taking my light meter out and I'm looking through my windows to see what direct light I'm getting. And I'm noticing, oh my gosh, I have almost no light in my home. Yeah. So I have epic grow lights, which I find very interesting. So once again, how confusing is that? Right? I have exactly. So much knowledge that I'm able to troubleshoot that, but so many people probably wouldn't have gotten past that. And obviously also more light will get that bigger, more robust growth alongside trailing, having them grow up, right?
Correct. Yep. A big part of it is having them grow up because they make aerial roots along the stems. Uh-huh. And if the aerial roots are growing into something where they can pull a little bit more moisture, maybe some nutrients out of, you're just supercharging that growth for the plant, allowing it to get bigger faster.
Uh-huh. Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. What's your favorite? Are you a moss pole guy? Are you a trellis guy? Are you a stick? Like, what are you mostly growing your plants up?
So inside, I really don't. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit harder for me to manage in terms of watering. And I have dogs, and so I don't want things to inadvertently get knocked over when the dogs get super excited. Mm-hmm. But outdoors, I buy fence planks just from my local hardware store. And then I have many, many different kinds of aroids climbing up the, you know, $2 fence planks.
Oh, that's amazing. That reminds me of my Italian grandma. That's how she used to stake all of her tomatoes, just with the little fence planks. So lo-fi. So what about pruning your pothos. So how do we get those big bushy pothoses, you know, that we see when we're at the store and then we bring the pothos home and all of a sudden it doesn't really look like that anymore?
All right. So here's a big secret that a lot of growers use for their pothos plants is that they use a lot of cuttings per pot because pothos is a climbing plant. And so the way it wants to grow is it has one or two main stems and that's it. And, you know, it's hard to have this really attractive, full, lush look with just one or two stems. And so we will use, you know, 5, 6, 8 different cuttings in the pot to fill it out. Mm. So that's an easy way that you can do that at home too, is just trim occasionally, drop those cuttings in the same pot as your main plant. They'll grow up and you'll get that bushier look.
Do you need to root them in water first and then plant them? Or are they hardy enough that you can cut the node and then just pop it right into the soil of its mother plant?
Depends on your moisture management style. If you keep it moist, it will be just fine rooting in. Uh-huh. And of course, there is a fine line between keeping it moist and not wet enough that the mother plant is unhappy. Uh-huh. But there's totally a zone that you can do that there.
Yeah. That's what I've done with this pothos that I've had forever. And I found it's so easy. Like, it's so easy to root. But then also, if you get one long vine, you can cut that one vine up into a bunch of singular node cuttings with one leaf, root that in water, and then you have an entirely new plant.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly how we propagate all of our pothos. We call them leaf and eye cuttings.
What about common plant problems? So when you have people asking you what's going wrong with the pothos, what are the normal reasons?
Vast majority of the time, it's going to be too much water.
Yeah. Yellow
leaf. They're loving it too much. You know, one of the great things about pothos is how tolerant it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't typically run into the, oh, you know, it's really not happy because it's not getting enough light, or, you know, oh, you don't have enough humidity for it. All of the common bases are covered with this one, except watering.
Yeah, I remember that. Once again, this plant was like such a teacher, but I overwatered it. And I remember like half the plant turned yellow and I was just like, no. But once again, it's hardy. As long as you treat for the overwatering and you know, let it dry out, it'll keep growing for you.
Yep.
So can you kind of talk about the different iterations of pothos? Like, we all know from the 70s, the Marble Queen, the Aureum. And then what other varieties have gotten popular? Like, is there kind of a timeline of the different varieties that have come to market? Because it feels like there used to be one variety and now there's a million.
So for a long time, it was just your basic ones.
Yeah.
And then University of Florida started doing some work with radiation of all things. They radiated Marble Queen. And they came up with Pearls and Jade. Radiation is actually a tried and true method of plant breeding. And a number of common houseplants came from radiation programs, like Hoya compacta. The variegated forms came out of radiation.
Okay, so it's a technique that breeders use to create new unique varieties that then they could propagate and bring to market.
Exactly.
Oh, okay, cool. That's fascinating.
Marble Queen has typically a heart-shaped leaf. And it's got like a marbled pattern of cream or white and green. And then Pearls and Jade has a smaller leaf and it has patches of white rather than a marbling pattern. And then it often has patches of different shades of green on top of the green and on top of the white. So it's not quite camo, but, you know, it's more like it than Marble Queen.
Yeah, I love that mint colored, that light green colors. And there's so much white. There's so much variegation on that plant.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that actually makes it a bit of a bear to grow at times because the more white a plant has, the less chlorophyll it has, the slower it is and the less tolerant it's going to be. So, you know, if you're used to Marble Queen, you know, or regular Golden Pothos, you may not have the exact same experience with some of these newer white variegated varieties.
Yeah. So say I get a highly variegated pothos variety. That's where you're also going to see browning. So does humidity help with that? Like, how would you, if you get a highly variegated, what would you suggest doing to make sure that it looks beautiful?
So the more highly variegated it is, the better it is to try to match the environment to Southeast Asia. Different forms of stress can cause browning. And it can be tough, especially if you're a beginner, to figure out, is this browning because it's not getting enough light? Is it browning because it's not enough or too much water? Is it browning because the humidity is not quite there? Or is it a factor of like all three of those things a little bit all together broke the camel's back?
Okay. So that's kind of an advanced, not the beginner or pothos.
Yeah. Yeah.
What comes after that one?
Meanwhile, I believe it was India, or at least I believe the breeders from India, came out with a variety called Enjoy, which is pretty similar to Pearls and Jade. Mm-hmm. And then Enjoy gave a sport called Manjula.
Right, which we see a lot of lately.
Manjula has a much bigger leaf. It's a wider leaf, but otherwise kind of similar to Enjoy, except it's more variable. You can totally get Marble Queen style leaves out of Manjula or the traditional Enjoy style variegation.
Mm-hmm. But it's a wider leaf.
Yep. It's a wider leaf. It's a much slower grower.
Okay.
And then in Japan, you've got a couple of breeders. One is a nursery called Turuno. And then another one that we were working with, he had a mutation that he called Global Green. Mm-hmm. Which has a smaller, you know, more traditional Enjoy style leaf shape, but has a dark green edge with a lighter green middle.
Ooh.
And so, you know, it has this really unique green on green variegation. And then here at Costa Farms, we found a sport on Global Green that we named Lemon Meringue. That's Global Green in reverse. It has yellow edges with a medium green middle.
That also brings me back to the like Hoya Queen and Princess, a white variegation on the inside or the outside. You're not developing all of these. So you're working with these breeders, selecting which plants you want to bring to market, and then you're growing them out and then actually distributing them. That's how it works?
Correct. Yep. We don't do any breeding work here. We have a team of plant hunters. We travel the world looking for new plants or plants that aren't necessarily new, but they're not readily available in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And then we go through a vigorous testing process. And then in the case like the lemon meringue pothos, we also sometimes find mutations here on the farm.
Yeah. So what did that look like? So you found this one mutation. Was it entire pot or was it just like
strand? Just one single strand that one of the growers happened to notice. And he's like, well, this is different.
Wow. So then what does that process look like? You take that one strand, you take a bunch of cuttings of it?
Well, I mean, you take that one cutting, you grow it out, mm-hmm. you start taking more cuttings. And the first step is always stability with pothos. Mm-hmm. Because the variegation is rarely truly stable where you're going to keep getting the same look every mm-hmm. time you propagate it. You know, so you go through the whole stabilization process. You throw out anything that doesn't look like it should, mm-hmm. you know, and you try to keep like the cleanest within. And you get to a point that then you say, okay, this is pretty stable. This is something that we can grow to market. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's important for us because if let's say one out of every three cuttings doesn't look like it should, you know, that's really hard for us to be able to plan and say, we're going to meet customer demand with this many plants. Mm. You know, if we know that 30% aren't going to come to market.
So lemon meringue comes, and then this is fun, the history of pothos. What comes next?
All right. So we found a mutation on lemon meringue. So it's going to be like the granddaughter of Global Green mm-hmm. That we called lemon top because the new leaves come out all gold. Or maybe with a little tiny bit of variegation. And then as they mature, they go dark green. So if you have this plant in good light, the top of it is always yellow. And then the old leaves are always green.
When do the fish gill plants come out? Where's Shangri-La in all of this?
All right. So that's the breeder in Japan, Turuno. There's an older variety called Neon that has this lovely neon green color. Mm-hmm. Neon gave way to a sport that he called Champs-Élysées. Apologies to anybody who speaks French and just heard me butcher that, where it has these little gills or crests on the underside of the leaf, which, you know, totally unique and very different and kind of collector, I think, within the pothos world. Not everybody loves the look. And then
definitely an acquired taste. It's definitely a very specific. It's cool. I mean, it's they're dark, you know, green leaves, but on the undersides, there are these like ridges that almost look like fish gills.
Yes. And then Champs gave way to a sport that he called Shangri-La, mm-hmm. where that one's even wilder in that the leaves don't open. They stay curled shut and they have even more texture. So a lot of people call this like the wilted spinach pothos.
Yeah. It looks more upright, obviously, because I guess the leaves don't open, but does it still grow as a trailer?
It does. Yep.
It is going to trail eventually.
Yep. So mine in my backyard is probably 5.5-6 feet long.
Okay. Wow. And you have it growing on one of those fence posts?
No. So this one I have growing on a tree and trailing down. I got excited about other plants and I didn't have the foresight to climb it up early on. Mm-hmm. I have some cuttings climbing up now. I'm very curious what the leaves are going to do as they get bigger. So this is going to be new territory for me once it gets established.
I love that. And it's interesting because it's new territory for everyone, right? Because now we're not talking about going into the rainforest and plucking a plant and bringing it home and distributing. And we're talking about varieties of plants that are created in a lab that are for the first, you know, how long has Shangri-La been in distribution for?
I want to say it's been in Japan for maybe 10 years.
Yeah. But even 10 years, it's like, even just to have a plant that's only 10 years old, like to see how it grows, that's kind of cool and kind of fun to be a part of that collection experience and the first round of people that really get to see and experience it. What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite version of Pothos?
Right now, I'm really digging on one called Albo, and it's a different species than the RM. It's Epipremnum pinnatum. And it has these irregular streaks and splashes of white. But the leaves fenestrate, so they get the holes and they develop splits as it matures.
It's so beautiful. I got to see it in Seattle, and also has like half moons, like has some, right? Some high leaf.
Yeah. Every leaf has the potential to do something just fun and crazy with the variegation. And then we just launched a marble pinnatum. So imagine Marble Queen, but with the fenestrations.
With the fenestrations. Now, this is interesting, too, because Pothos now is trending towards these fenestrated versions. We've never seen Pothos in pots. I mean, you and I see Pothos that are fenestrated in nature in Florida all the time, but we haven't seen fenestrated Pothos before. And this is now, you have multiple varieties that are fenestrated now, right?
Yes, we have four.
Yeah. So fascinating. Even after Monstera, like seeing Raphidophora, like Tetrasperma come to market, like these fenestrations seemed to be much more popular.
They're very trendy.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right house plants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
Okay, I want to do a rapid fire matchmaking with you. I'm going to tell you a plant personality and the high level of what they are, and then I'd love for you to matchmake and suggest the perfect pothos for them.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so let's start with mindful plant parent. This is going to be the helicopter plant parent. So the one who might overwater. So what is the most water-friendly pothos in the bunch?
Probably your good old-fashioned golden pothos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hardy, resilient, reliable. On the other side, low maintenance plant parent, what's the most drought tolerant, easy, probably low light tolerant option out there?
Jade. So jade is an all green cultivar, no variegation whatsoever. So okay. It is the tank within the pothos world, even more hearty than the
tank. I love that. Okay, what about the curious collector? So that's going to be the one that's looking for the new trending rare varieties.
Well, that's hard because there are so many. You know, Lemon Top is the newest and probably the hardest to find because it's just from us. And if that sounds too much like shameless self-promotion, I might go with something like the like the Shangri-La, which is still relatively hard to find and, you know, very much a collector's look.
Very much a collector's look. Very unique and odd. And someone who would like lithops, I feel like, would like, you know, the Shangri-La just for that kind of oddness. What about someone who's approaching the design base? So someone who's approaching plants all for the aesthetic. So probably, like, what's the best trailer? Like, is there a fastest grower? Something that's really going to take over a bookshelf?
So jade or golden are going to be your fastest growers because they don't have, you know, the mm-hmm. variegation. Global green is pretty quick because it's green on green variegation.
And then urban farmer, that's edible and flowering. None of them flower, yeah, indoors?
No. And none of them are people or pet friendly for nibblers either. So
yeah, for nibblers either. Okay, so we're going to pass on the urban farmer. Pothos are not for you, but there's plenty of varieties that are available for you. So obviously, most of the varieties we talked about today, not all, because you were generous, are distributed by Costa. Can you tell us a little bit more about Costa for anyone who might not have heard of it before?
Sure. So Costa Farms, fourth generation family run farm. We're based in Miami, Florida, founded by a Cuban immigrant who wanted to build a better life for his family. And we've grown about 5,000 acres now. We grow about 1,500 different plant varieties. And we work with retailers, independent garden centers, and big box stores across the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah. And if you've seen, now the thing that I also am, one of my missions is helping the consumer understand more clearly, like, what a Costa plant might look like in a store. So what are the different brands under the Costa umbrella that I might be shopping and see? So I know, oh, this is a Costa plant. I want to grab it and try it.
So our main collections are trending tropicals, mm-hmm. Which are the newest and rarest and most fun. We have exotic angel, mm-hmm. which are small tabletop plants in hanging baskets. And then we have desert escape, which are cacti and succulents.
Now that I think about it, I feel like this pothos that I have might have been an exotic angel. You know, it's too old. It's 8 years old. So who knows? But now that I'm thinking about it, because it was a big hanging basket. Anyway, you are such a delight. So where can people find you and your social presence? And where can people find Costa for more information?
All right. So CostaFarms.com is our website. We're also Instagram, Facebook, Costa.Farms on TikTok. YouTube. I'm on Instagram at Justin W. Hancock. I should know my TikTok handle, but I don't off the top of my head because I'm more of a viewer than a user.
We'll put it in the show notes. We'll find you.
Excellent.
Make sure people know. But also Justin's on the account all the time. Justin's on the Costa account all the time. I was just watching a reel with you on it today.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe more than I should be, but.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Justin. You're the best.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Justin, for this conversation. If you listened to this episode, I highly recommend you going to YouTube and watching it. You can scroll through it, but the YouTube video of this podcast interview on Growing Joy with Maria YouTube, I put up pictures of all of the different pothos, all of the different pothos leaves and growing types. So there's a lot of visual aid in this YouTube podcast specifically. We do have YouTube videos for all of our podcasts. If you like to listen or watch podcasts on YouTube, but for this one specifically, you should check it out. Also, if you haven't checked out my YouTube, I have so many amazing plant care tutorials and vlogs and tours. There's so many things on that YouTube channel. I'm also adding the link to the blog on Costa's website that was kind of the inspiration for some of our conversations today. It breaks down all of the different pothos by leaf. And we will also link to Justin's personal accounts and where you can find him, and also Costa Farms. You should look for their trending tropical line, the exotic angel line. They have so many different pothos. I have the Jessenia variety growing in my lanai, and it is growing like gangbusters. Like I said, I have a marble queen, one of my old ride or die plants. I have some lemon limes, but I'm definitely going to be adding more pothos to my collection this year, as they really are just the most underrated plant. And when you're shopping, make sure to be checking for the Costa Farms trending tropicals, exotic angel plant tags, because they make a really good bushy pothos plant, friends. Let me tell you, I've purchased many of them that are in my house, and I've gifted them a lot because they're a great starter plant for so many people. I hope this episode was fun and you really enjoyed the timeline of the pothos. I got such a kick out of that and I learned so much, all in the efforts to help you every week continue to keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey.
If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.